to the ashes of the Imperium.
Hello and welcome to Ashes of the Imperium. My name is Dan, and as ever, I'm joined by the wonderful Steve. How are you, Steve?
Very good, mate. Very good. Very good.
All wonderful. Today, we are talking all about Book 3 of the ongoing Arcs of Omen saga, and that is Arcs of Omen Vashtor.
Yes. Yes, we get to get inside the mind.
Inside the mind of the machine.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. I thought this was a really interesting little insight into Vashtor as a character, because he, up until now, has been slightly... There's not much being said about him.
No, on our kind of observations of him, kind of through the eyes of Abaddon. So it's his interpretation of what this mechanical demon is thinking, rather than the geezer himself.
Absolutely. So I think what we should do, we should have a brief moment to reflect back on what's happened so far in a kind of like previously on Arcs of Omen. And the book very helpfully has a couple of paragraphs here. So we'll just read this, because it's a nice little bit of context for anyone joining us now, or, you know, it's been a few weeks since the last episode. So
we're all going to sit down on the carpet.
Absolutely. Pull up a sandbag. It's story time. War raged amidst the stars. The cruel laughter of the dark gods echoed throughout the void. Sundered by the Great Rift and tormented by bloody conflicts beyond count, the galaxy writhed in pain. Mutual annihilation threatened, but Abaddon the Despoiler began a quest to find some final weapon or prophetic insight of such fateful power that it would decisively turn the galactic conflict, no less, in his favour. The answer was seemingly brought to him by Vashtor the Archithane, demonic master of the Soul Forges. Working in uneasy alliance, the demon and the Warmaster poured their combined resources into fashioning titanic mutant warships from captured space hulks. These were the Arcs of Omen. Augmented with Vashtor's gifts and accompanied by bale fleets of heretic warships, the Arcs struck all across the galaxy. Though they spread misery and ruin seemingly at random, their true task was to claim warp-imbued artifacts. These, Vashtor claimed to be able to meld into a terrifying device he called simply The Key. Key with a capital K, you know it's important. He claimed that this key, with a capital K, would open the way to a weapon that would grant Abaddon victory in real space and elevate Vashtor to the status of a true Chaos God. As the onslaught of the Arcs of Omen ground on, especially savage conflicts erupted around the most vital key fragments. Amidst these apocalyptic campaigns, demigods bestrode the stars, and ancient fiends emerged from the shadows of legend to spread terror anew. Most spectacular of all was the Battle of Malak, which we covered in a previous episode, which if you haven't listened to, go back and listen to that. Fought within the unseen spiritual radiance of the device known as the Choral Engine. Again, capital C, capital E, you know it's important. But this Choral Engine had no plot armor for, as we shall find out. Though this pre-imperial machine had allowed the Indomitus Crusade Fleet Quartus to accelerate their conquest amidst the stars, it also proved their downfall. No less a monster than Angron, demon primarch of the World Eater's Legion, was drawn to its radiance at the head of the largest traitor fleet seen since the height of the Gothic War. In the roiling system-wide battle that followed, the Choral Engine and the planet Malak Ba'el were destroyed in a supernatural cataclysm that hurled Khorne's murder curse out across the stars and also exposed the key fragment hidden at Malak Ba'el's heart. Amidst the devastation, Vashtor himself manifested to claim this true prize. The Archithane's plans were advancing, but there were vital elements yet to slot into place. Ellipsis.
I'm all tingly now, Dan.
We should just transition to ASMR, right? Just each of us reading Warhammer lore in increasingly sultry tones. That was meant to be mildly tongue-in-cheek, not sultry. So if that's your thing, Steve, whatever.
I usually have to pay extra.
Subscribe to our Patreon for that. We don't even have a Patreon, so that's never mind. This is all free, pure free content. Right, so this is exciting, because in this book we do find a little bit more about Vashtor the Archithane, and we find out a little bit more about him as a character, and also the the forces that he surrounds himself with. So for me, one of the most interesting things, and I want people to kind of think about this as we talk through this, as they join us on this journey, is what would a Vashtor army look like? So Vashtor is a character, and the data sheet for him is included in the back of this book, Book 3, Arcs of Omen. You'd think that a book titled Arcs of Omen Vashtor would have rules for Vashtor in it, and you would be correct. His war scroll, his data sheet, is included in the back of this book. And he's a Chaos Heretic Astartes Traitoris Astartes model. So, which is weird, because he's obviously not an Astartes, he's a demon.
Yeah.
But he has to have those faction keywords to be included in a Chaos Space Marines army.
Which is this entire campaign. So that I don't have a problem with that.
I don't have a problem with that. However, it means that he doesn't really have an army of his own, which is kind of fitting in, as we kind of discover a little bit more about the lore and the forces that join him on this element of the campaign. I will highlight here that this episode was recorded prior to the release of the Cogs of Vashtor data sheet that was released on the Warcom website, which does provide you with a way to play a themed Vashtor army. Two of the things that I highlight here as examples, which are Rubric Marines and Plague Marines, aren't actually allowed in the army, so my bad. But yeah, so check out that data sheet. It's on Warcom. It's the Cogs of Vashtor, Army of Renown, and is a great way to play a themed Vashtor army. But this was really our kind of like wish listing or kind of idea story forge here. I think for me, from a modeling perspective, what would be really cool is to see like what those forces look like when they're with Vashtor. So sure, you could have, you know, generic Chaos Space Marines, like, and it talks about Iron Warriors, for example, joining the sort of the warband. Like, well, what, like, how would you make it? Obviously, Iron Warriors are generically kind of techie, mechy anyway, but what would like a less tech machine focused Chaos Warband look like? Let's say you're taking, I don't know, Thousand Suns or something. Then what would like a kind of Azintian faction of Space Marines look like when they're aligned to Vashtor? You know, are you going to use their kind of magic psychic rules as a way to represent, I don't know, like some sort of weird like machine curses? Or are you going to take something like the Red Corsairs, like a kind of piratey kind of Chaos Warband, but just, you know, maybe they've got more bionics, or maybe they've got some like mecha tendrils kind of coming out of their backpacks. Whatever. Like, how do you make a force look and feel like a force that's on the campaign with Vashtor the Archivane?
Yeah, we definitely get a few insights, which would immediately, you know, dive into the cupboard and pull out all your demon engines, because they make perfect sense about what we see him do. He can manipulate machinery at will to create improvements in spaceships that we've seen him do, for sure. The thing is, I don't know that we really see him particularly aligned with any of the gods, do we?
No, but I think that's the point, isn't it? He wants to be his own god. He wants to be one of the Chaos Gods. Yeah. So he's not really aligned to any of them, because he's in competition with them.
Yeah. So I think in some ways he would use any of the Chaos forces as tools, you know, literally as tools. So whether he could have as much control over Zinch than he could perhaps.
I suppose what I mean there isn't necessarily using actual Thousand Suns, is using Thousand Suns rules to use kind of Zinchy models in your force. I don't necessarily expect like the Rubric Eye of Aramin to be marching alongside the Archivane, but then that's who's to say that that isn't the case. There's a great little line where it's a really really quick one, but it says like a, you know, plague bearers are kind of fighting alongside him, and they're summoned, and they're described with smog belching boilers jutting from their flesh. And I think that that reminds me of the Gellipox.
Yeah,
and I think that would be a really cool way to kind of make, you could just have like a squad of plague bearers, but like amongst them you could include a couple of the Gellipox. You could use the larger Gellipox as like Chaos Spawn or something.
It's almost like he's gonna corrupt them with machinery in a way, or yeah. whatever forces are with him. He's going to, because I think, like I say, he definitely talks about this kind of plan within a plan within a plan that's layered, and these cogs he set in motion for millennia to get to the point of which he can put the key together. And I think, you know, we're beginning to see that he's allowed for a bit of redundancy in some of this as well.
He's obviously a schemer, isn't he? He's a natural yeah. schemer. And I think that is kind of borne out in the narrative. And the narrative, I should also point out, the narrative does allow players to, we're talking about like, what would an army look like against, you know, with Vashtor. This obviously book is focused specifically on an engagement led by Vashtor. But it is set within the context of the overarching arc of Omen's narrative saga. And even the first few pages do allude to lots of different factions kind of being involved. And it's centered around Vashtor essentially like kind of looking into his crystal ball, basically like, oh, what's going on around the galaxy? And it talks about like, you know, an arc of Omen or a space hulk that's been boarded or attacked by Drakari Corsairs, or one that's been beset by Tyranids, or one where I think it kind of alludes to the Necrons and the Silent King, where it says, hear the Perfidium and its emperor's children's masters gripped by their obsession to claim not only their own key fragment, but as many more as they could recover. There, the Sacrificed, dark, drifting and lifeless, traces of withered plant life were dotted here and there about its corridors amidst the hewn and blasted dead. And that second one, that Sacrificed, it's like, maybe that's the Necrons, you know, withered life. And then it goes on to say later, a couple of paragraphs later, it says, and then of course there was the Dreamer, the exile king. He, of any, would have cause to despise Vashtor's artifice if he learned the truth. He roamed further afield by the day and no longer fought alone. He left broken cogs in his wake, the Sacrificed only the most recent amongst them. So the Dreamer, the exile king who no longer fights alone. I mean, that just sounds like Sarek, the Silent King, doesn't it? And the kind of the lifeless Sacrificed there, the Space Hulk, suggests that it's been withered by the kind of the Necron's assault. But the point there is that regardless of what faction you play, there's a cool way to incorporate them into this kind of campaign narrative.
Yeah, 100%. And I think even, you know, we see him on numerous occasions. You know, Vashtor will appear to, you know, abandon his troops, but that's only because he's got what he needed and they are entirely redundant now and they can be left to their own devices. And I mean, that's a proper evil villain, isn't it?
Yeah, he doesn't quite have a moustache to twirl, but I'm feeling those vibes.
Exactly.
Are there any specific bits in the kind of lead up, Steve, that caught your eye?
I think for me, the fact that he absolutely has these connections and tendrils out to all of the arcs that are going out, and he can see the ones that are working and the ones that aren't. So, again, you know, we mustn't forget that, you know, he has this demon ability to kind of have that going on. And yet he still, at the moment, I guess at the moment, you know, he is still playing the secondary role to Abaddon. So he, you know, he knows who he needs to have on side for this. So, yeah, he's... I think this book for me really, really fleshes him out as a character and makes him really playable.
In what sense playable?
As in, I could bring him into my army and he's not just a stat line anymore. He's got a way of approaching things. He's got this kind of bigger plan, the abandonment of whatever needs to be done to achieve his... Yeah, I don't necessarily see him having a lot of tertiary goals in a battle. He's out there to achieve his one thing that's part of his bigger scheme. And yeah, I think, like you said right at the beginning, I think the ability to go in and make your demon engines more akin to him, and they can be different and they can be peculiar, because he will do whatever it needs to be. You know, he will change them and tweak them, and that's just a thought to him to do that. Do you know what I mean? We're not talking about forges or hammering and sawing. It's a metamorphosis they'll go through. So, yeah, really kind of powerful dude.
Yeah, and there's a great little paragraph that says, as the demigod of every scientist who injected an agent or practiced a theorem before it was ethically safe, every engineer who ever cast aside regulations in the name of liberated intellect, it was well within Vashtor's nature to improvise thus. A span of time had passed since the events of Malak Bail, at least as mortals perceived it with their limited senses. Now it was time for Vashtor to dirty himself with the confining touch of real space again. And that sort of leads us into the main narrative. But I think that little lead in is quite interesting, because it's like, he isn't just a like god of machines, but he's a god of machines and scientists and academics, of, you know, people that have like maybe cut corners or taken off the little restraining clamps that allow you to operate a machine safely. And, you know, whereas Khorne is the god of blood and death and murder, this guy's, you know, he's the god of something a little bit more kind of intellectual and esoteric.
Yeah.
Being like super magic-y like Tzeentch.
Yeah, there's a great paragraph here. It says, a wave of Vashtor's taloned hand and the intricate masses of wires and circuits cradling the bomb mutated. Silver worms writhed through the underdeck spaces, weaving themselves into a newly meshing temporal stasis generator Vashtor had improvised. It was a crude thing by his standards, but the Archiphane knew it would prevent the bomb from detonating for precisely 55 minutes and 55 seconds, just long enough for his purposes. So,
and he creates a little warp portal and flings that stasis bomb somewhere, doesn't he?
Yeah, he does. It does.
I love it.
And there's even we talked about what an army, what does a Vashtor army look like? And there's even a little glimmer of hope for me, because I just love the idea of this. And obviously, if it isn't super obvious, then we are going to cover some quite aggressive spoilers in this. If you've got this far and you haven't worked that out, then you know, so be it. But yeah, he does stumble across an AI, or in the 40K universe, an abominable intelligence. So there was essentially an AI that was hiding in an inquisitorial watch station.
Yeah,
and it was named the Orak Myriad. And he essentially later like implants its AI kind of machine spirit into an Ark of Omen, and it becomes the Orak Reborn or something.
Yes. So I don't think you're as old as me, Dan, by quite a long way, but
just a couple of years.
But you've heard of Orak before, haven't you?
No.
Blake 7.
Ooh.
So for the listeners at home, it was probably 1980s BBC sci-fi show, and Blake 7 was so Blake and his motley crew were kind of righteous bandits fighting against the tyranny of the overseers of the galaxy, and they happened to come across, I can't remember, it's way too long ago, they happened to come across this ship, the Liberator, and on board was a
for reference, Blake 7 is a old science fiction TV program, right?
Yes, exactly.
That I have now ascertained, having googled it whilst you were explaining this, Steve, because I was like, is this real life? Or they came across a starship called Liberator. I was like, this is made up. I was like, how have I not heard of this scientific thing called an Orak before?
So on board the Liberator was a large acrylic clear box with flashing lights in,
right?
Which at the time was all you needed to have a artificial intelligence.
Mm.
And that artificial intelligence in the box was called Orak.
Ah.
So I think there's either a nod to the oldies or just a piece of bad luck there. But
no, that's entirely intentional, isn't it?
Yeah.
That is entirely intentional. Oh, that's cool. Oh, that's interesting. Yeah, so the Orak Myriad was the AI itself, and it later becomes the Auruk Unleashed, which is the name of the Ark of Omen, once it has this kind of AI like melded with it into some like awful machine. And for me, it's really interesting because it means that there's scope for kind of like, what does a dark mech army look like? A faction in 40K for models, like how do we see that developing into like models on the tabletop, either from a converter's perspective, so, you know, doing your own thing, or from a Games Workshop releasing actual dedicated models for Dark Mechanicum. Now, it would be cool to obviously convert a whole bunch of Mechanicum models and using, you know, Skitarii as cultists for 40K, for Chaos Space Marines rather, and, you know, just converting up some other bits and bobs. You know, maybe you could just go through the Adeptus Mechanicus range and just kind of see what could be run as various different things within the Chaos Space Marines range. But I think even cooler would be an actual Dark Mechanicum codex.
Yeah, I mean, that's got to be on a whiteboard somewhere in GW, hasn't it, as a one day project?
Oh yeah, yeah. I would love to see that.
It would sell. It would sell really well.
I think so. I think it's also niche. It's different enough. It's not too niche, rather. It's different enough that you could do something completely different to the actual Adeptus Mechanicus range without it just being like, you know, Adeptus Mechanicus, but with spikes.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And I think it would be perfect to then, you know, all of the tens of thousands of people around the planet that have Chaos armies, you go, well, I'll get some of those to run alongside, that'll be no problem at all. You know, I think it's a no brainer for them as well. So yeah, no, hopefully it's slowly moving up the to-do list at GW.
Yes, well, they've done Plastic Sisters and they've done squats, so, you know, Dark Mechanicum next, please.
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, there's only so many of these things you can do a year, isn't there? And I think, it's and you want them to do it right, which is what they did with Sisters. I mean, that was just a colossal
release. It is an amazing range, isn't it? Right. Anyway, back onto Vashtor.
Stay on target.
Stay on target, Steve. I know you start talking about Sisters about, and you get all excited because they're one of your favorite armies.
Yes.
So I was kind of thinking that this book would end slightly differently. You know, it's set on the Dark Angels kind of homeworld / roving planet fragment called the Rock, the roving fortress. And Vashtor essentially invades the Rock, and he's working his way down into the depths of the Rock to try and find.
But there is a cool thing that allows him to get on board, which I liked.
Go on then.
Which was the Unmaker.
Ooh, yeah. How does he get past the shield on the Rock then, Steve?
So again, I think it's just another great example of his ability to A-team all of this stuff together, and basically makes a five-fold lens device, and basically overpowers. And it was called the
Gorgon's Aegis.
Gorgon's Aegis, yes, there you go. So they have to overpower the force field, which is the Gorgon's Aegis, which is, it basically seems to be an impenetrable outer defensive shield. But by overpowering that, basically they then have to rely on just your typical shields, which will stop a certain amount of fire. But the most important thing is it allows Chaos forces to land on the Rock, which is exactly where you were saying before I rudely interrupted you, Dan.
No, that's quite all right. That's an important point, because it's something that he's planned for ages, and using this Unmaker weapon, and the Unmaker weapon is powered by essentially like warp drives.
Yes.
And they kind of channel as, and not just like warp drives in things that make you jump into the warp, that as the name suggested, as in like, they're like engines that channel the very power of the warp into real space.
Yes. And I think for me, again, we just get this insight of the capability, you know, because you look at a weapon like that and you kind of go, wow, that's pretty bloody powerful. But what does the key make? What can the key do? If he can kind of hammer and saw that together in the shed, what's the key going to do when they get that together? So again, and for me, just gives that sense of scale of what's happening.
Yeah, and so it's like the scale of ambition that this guy has, this demigod has. And I think launching a direct assault onto the Rock is a pretty bold shout. And essentially, you know, we'll let you, you know, read. We don't want to spoil it all and read it word for word. But essentially, he fights his way onto the Rock and kind of gets pretty much near to where he needs to be. And then he's absolutely scuppered by a mysterious. Intervention.
Party crasher.
Absolutely. It's quite funny because I thought two things were going to happen. I thought, the lion was going to awake and the Dark Angels were going to fight back. And that was going to be, this was going to be the kind of introduction of the lion. And secondly, when that didn't appear to be happening, or at least in the sort of lead up to that, I thought, oh, what could possibly rouse the lion, you know, to come to save the Dark Angels? Perhaps it would be like a mass assault of the fallen. And there's this great moment where essentially like all the stage lights go off and all these space marines suddenly appear who are like, you know, with hoods and cloaks and robes and stuff. And everyone's like, all the Dark Angels are like, oh my God, it's the Fallen. And then they take their hoods off. They're like, surprise, it's just the Alpha Legion and the Word Bearers led by Bellicor come to like muck up the plan. So yeah, Bellicor rocks up and is basically like, nah, we're not having this. Vashtor, you know, I think to someone like Bellicor, Vashtor is probably like a young pup.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's cool that as organized as they can be, it's still chaos. And there's still eager. I mean, we were talking earlier about what armies to bring to play this with. I mean, we hear stories of infighting between warlords where I don't think they really care what they're doing. It's just that one warlord's upset that another one was been given the Ark of Omen, the big Hulk ship to command. So they end up fighting over that. And I think for me that feels entirely right. That you know, despite themselves, they're still a completely dangerous force. But if they actually, you know, could organize themselves for more than 5 minutes, you know, mankind would be over with.
I've just got slightly distracted looking at Necron Flayed One models, thinking how to make those slightly more kind of Imperium-y.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Like maybe head swaps and like make the head servo skulls or something.
Oh, yeah.
Because there's an amazing bit of art on page 22. It's kind of crosses over 22, 23. It's just this kind of central bit of art. And it's just it's kind of like a humanoid mixed with machines with a chainsword coming out of his mouth.
Yes.
It's like a kind of demon human thing with a chainsaw coming out of his mouth. And I just thought, oh, that looks a bit like a flayed one. And I wonder whether you could do something there. But yeah, oh, there's so much conversion potential here in this book.
Yeah.
In the same way, the murder curse in the previous book, you think, oh, how can I make something look like it's fallen to Khorne? And here it's like, well, how can I make something look like it's fallen to the machine curse? So there's lots of scope to do your own thing. And if you wanted to do something more traditional, you can certainly do that. Or you could represent the forces aligned to Bellicor. And you know, to do a more traditional kind of chaos mixed force, but yeah, kind of like wrapping up the kind of the narrative side of this book is essentially Bellicor foils Vashtor's plan, whatever that might be, and that's kind of the end of it. And Vashtor realizes that he's not really got he's lost the momentum and lost the element of surprise, and it's not going to work out. So he effectively retreats/is sent back to the abyss. And it then kind of cuts to the kind of interrogation of some of the heretic Astartes that are left on the Rock once the forces of Vashtor and Bellicor disappear. And there's one specific one where there's a Chaos Space Marine called Dergar is being interrogated, and he's denying everything and saying nothing of value. But then he suddenly has this kind of obligation to reveal something where he says, oh, the demon is, you know, the demon, i.e. Vashtor, the demon who who was the architect of all this suffering and chaos and destruction on the rock. You know, he's located in these Somnium stars, and the interrogator in question then reports back to Asmodai, and they discuss whether, you know, is it a trap. And Asmodai says, if it is the lure for a trap, it is a strange and unsubtle one. And effectively, it then cuts to Abaddon, who summons Vashtor via a kind of weird machine blood ritual. And Vashtor and Abaddon are kind of like, well, yeah, sure, it's a super obvious trap. But if someone's so clever that they can launch an assault on the rock, why would they do such a very, very obvious trap? Surely it must be a double bluff. Surely they must want us to think that it is a trap and that not to go there. Therefore, we must go there. It's like, okay, well, I'm kind of confused, but whatever. And so effectively, we've got this kind of like to be continued in episode 4 in the next arc of Omen's book. Perhaps going to be located in the Somnian stars.
Yeah, I think it's a nice little bit of setup. There is a adventure update that we get, which was that they've calculated that they have 70%.
Oh yes, that's a great little
collected.
Yes,
so it's like okay. And again, we do know some of the arcs have failed. Some of these tendrils that have been sent out have failed. So, you know, how are you going to patch the holes in the DNA, as it were?
Yeah, and I kind of thought it was weird because I thought they were after one of the kind of like the main key fragments. So effectively, they've got to combine all these little key fragments to make the key. But there are four, cardinal fragments or primary fragments that they have to have. And, you know, I think we've said before that you can collect, you know, some key fragments. And as long as you've got like a critical mass, you can build the key.
Yeah.
The more you have, the better. But there are some kind of like anchor fragments that that exist. And there's this little bit where it says... completion of the key remains our single purpose. And this is Vashtor speaking to Abaddon. Completion of the key remains our single purpose, that you might have your weapon and I my final apotheosis. We still require as many more key fragments as can be secured, and we still lack one of the triumvirate of core mechanisms. Oh, sorry, there's three, a triumvirate. There's three core mechanisms. We still lack one of the triumvirate of three core mechanisms. Our arcs have now accumulated more than 70% of the desired fragments. Amongst them, a pleasingly high ratio of richly significant and thus supernaturally empowered artifacts. Know you that my labor is toil without rest. Already the key nears completion in its place of restoration. Those of our arc still hunting, search for fragments of great power that will ensure the key is as great and terrible a device as can be engineered, as it should be. So all this is. And then there's this kind of bit where Abaddon's like, but without ... Abaddon caught himself. It would not do to name their missing prize in this lawless sanctum. He did not know who or what might be listening. Without the last of the three, all is wasted effort. The key will not wake. And, yada, yada, yada. But so they've got two of the triumvirate of core mechanisms, but there's this one missing one. And it's like, well, is the one missing one what they were after on the rock? Or did he need something from the rock in order to access it in the Somnian stars? Because whatever it is, they're trying to lure the Dark Angels to the Somnian stars.
Yes. Because, I mean, one of the things that the crescendo of the fight on the rock was them fighting down through the Galleria, through the kind of the hallowed halls.
Oh, yeah. All the kind of like the under parts of the rock, the kind of the super secret Dark Angel-y bits.
Yeah, and I really liked that. And I think for me, kind of goes back to that whole idea about, you know, boarding action being played on, you know, a ship with the tiles and walls that we have that look very much like the corridors of a freighter or the maintenance corridors of a ship. But to be able to play with the rules in some of these hugely named places, like we've got the Hall of Memories, we've got the
Procyon, the Stair of Shadows.
Exactly. So I think it's and you know, to have some of these things where, you know, you'd have these massive statues of, you know, named heroes of the Dark Angels and stuff like that, and actually fighting on and around them and all that stuff, I think would make for a really cool game. And you could still do it boarding action, because okay, the main forces may be going down the main parts, but there's going to be lots of other bits to do. So as a very different way of challenging the game, I think it would be great fun to do.
Definitely. And again, I think goes on to talk to kind of how this campaign isn't just Vashtor invading a planet. You know, it isn't just a planetfall mission. It could be that. It isn't just a city fight mission. Yeah, absolutely. You know, I'm sure they would be fighting through the kind of cathedral cities of the Dark Angels.
Yeah.
But it's also boarding actions. And there's obviously rules at the back of this book for more boarding action stuff, which we'll talk to in a little bit. In the same way that any Ark of Omen could house any number of things, you know, there's no reason why a huge internal part of a, like we discussed in previous episodes, is, you know, internal part of a space hulk could literally be a jungle.
Yeah.
You know, what does a Garden of Nurgle look like within a Nurgle infested space hulk? What does a you know, maybe there's like a rogue trader's kind of ship has been like merged with it, and it had like this cool like biome, or maybe they were like smuggling forbidden plants and stuff like that, like
nice.
like a death world's illegal, like, do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah, yeah.
Contraband species of flora and fauna being smuggled out by a rogue trader, and that ship is now been, it was lost in the warp and never seen again, and now it's part of a space hulk and an Ark of Omen, and like, there you go, you've suddenly got essentially like a Catachan-esque death world on a ship.
Yeah, no, I love it. I mean, we get told of the fact that some of the hulks are either partly or whole, almost wholly kind of run through with Tyranids, but the, you know, the engines and perhaps the engine room and perhaps the control room are, you know, within the control of Chaos, and they've just shut the door and pulled the curtains, and, you know, they don't need to control the whole ship. But if it's flying towards something really important and you are the Imperium and you need to stop it, you know, the front door isn't the control room. You've got to go through a bunch of places to get there. So yeah, fighting your way through this kind of breeding pool of Tyranids to get to a control room to then kill Chaos Marines that are flying the ship, you get half your collection out in one game. Brilliant.
Yeah, definitely. One of the things I also found quite interesting, and this is obviously, I think these are kind of more look like they're kind of fighting through the kind of upper, on the surface of the rock, is they've got Redemptor Dreadnoughts and Impulsor Tanks in Deathwing colors.
Yes.
Which is quite cool. I don't think I'd seen that before. I'd seen Dreadnoughts in Deathwing colors, but like old school Dreadnoughts. So I hadn't actually seen a Primaris Dreadnought in Deathwing colors before. And I don't think I'd seen the tanks in the Repulsor. Is that a Repulsor or a Gladiator? I can't tell.
Yeah, you got me.
Yeah, yeah, it's a Repulsor Executioner with the plasma turret,
right.
Yes. in Deathwing colors, which is cool.
Yeah,
because it's not even like it's a transport one. You know, this is to transport Deathwing, I don't know, First Company veterans or something, like the Primaris Honor Guard. This is just a Deathwing tank, whatever, because it's in the First Company.
Yeah.
I do feel from a modeling perspective, a real shame not to update the Deathwing Terminators, you know, with this kind of new focus on the Dark Angels and the release of a Primaris Azrael. I really hope they do Primaris Asmodai and Primaris Ezekiel. That would be really, really cool. So some real classic models from my childhood.
Yeah.
But I think it's both a shame not to see some cool, like what do Deathwing Knights look like in Primaris mode? But at the same time, Terminators are so iconic that, like, what are you going to replace them with unless they're just kind of Primarisy versions of that? Because we've got things like the Aggressors,
yeah,
but they're not really Primaris Terminators, are they? I think they're kind of like a spiritual nod to them, but they're not. They don't feel like the same thing.
No. I don't know what you would do to make them tougher, really, as a Terminator. I mean, what I guess you could bulk them out, but they'd end up being pretty much square and walking fringe.
Yeah, walking fringe. I mean, Terminator's pretty much that anyway, aren't they? Yeah, I don't know. It's just, it's one of those things. It's kind of like, it's both a shame because it would be cool to see primary Terminators, but at the same time, Terminators are so iconic. But then that said, you know, like we haven't seen primary assault marines yet. We've seen Inceptors, but they're not assault marines, you know. I do wonder, you know, at what point are firstborn marines going to get phased out completely, and at what point is it just going to be Primaris marines on sale? You know, how long are they going to keep selling us Space Marine Scouts for?
Yeah,
you know, those models are ancient.
Yeah, they need updating. I mean, I think.
Well, they That's the point. They don't. Space Marine Scouts don't need updating because we've got Infiltrators. We've got the Phobos things. So maybe Deathwing. Well, maybe Terminators don't need updating. Maybe they're just one of those things that stay forever because that's just a part of the core model range. But then I suppose the same could be said for Scouts as well. I just, you know, obviously they're a much older kit and don't look as nice.
Yeah, yeah. I would be interested to see what a revisit to that idea of a Terminator might look like. I think posing and the ability for them to just feel a bit more mobile, maybe. But again, they're just walking tanks anyway. I don't think they don't feel that broken, do they?
No, that's fair. Anyway, that is our little kind of narrative review. We're going to move on slightly and talk a bit about some of the rules at the back, and which we'll kind of not go into a huge amount of detail. But effectively, you've got boarding action rules for Chaos Demons, Necrons, Tyranids, Gene Stealer Cults, and Death Guard, as well as AdMech. This is your usual mix of adding some enhancements. So what kind of used to consider to be Warlord traits, and as well as some rules adaptations. So you know, Demons lose the Fly keyword, and you can include Flesh Hounds, even though they're fast attack, and things like that. And so it was, for me, again, another missed opportunity. It would have been really cool to have seen a Tyranid rule, which is instead replaced with you can only include one Lictor unit. It would have been really cool to be like, you could just take five Lictors.
Yes.
Or whatever.
Exactly what's on my list to talk about.
Yeah. And to be honest, I think I'm just going to do that anyway. Like, yeah. My boarding patrol, I think, is just going to be five Lictors, or however many Lictors it is. For like, from a narrative perspective, that's just so cool.
Yeah, I agree. I think my initial thoughts on these additional rules for boarding actions was, I really liked it because it was really, really simple. But actually, it's ended up now, this is our second set of additional rules, if you want to call it. I think they actually let the right things in, and just, you know, the ability to bring stuff that has the fly rule, but for the Tyranids, but they don't fly, and allow some really fun boarding action stratagems. Because obviously, just for those who didn't hear the first show, all your book stratagems are gone. There's just some core ones, which includes opening doors. But there's a great one for the Tyranids. This is an example here. Living Rams for one command point. Such is the Tyranids' numbers and hunger, they can force open bulkheads with sheer mass and momentum. So the stratagem in your movement phase, when an endless multitude unit from your army is selected to make a normal or advanced move, until the end of the phase, once whilst moving a model in that unit, they can open one hatchway that is within 1 inch of that model. This does not end the model's movement. It can continue to move up to its full movement distance after the hatchway is opened. So that's great. They just smash through the door and keep going. And I think that's the sort of stuff that's really good to see.
Yeah, it adds a huge amount of like narrative depth, doesn't it, to be able to use these stratagems. Have always been like that. They've always been a way to bring the narrative of your army to life on the tabletop. They just became this kind of, you know, mutated beast where there were like pages and pages and pages of stratagems, whereas actually, like, just having half a dozen stratagems is cool. Like, it's just a nice way to bring some things. And like, I do wonder what 10th edition is going to look like, and how, you know, we're obviously prepping prepping for the 10th, you know, huge amount of rumors pointing to a summer 2023 release for 10th edition. Yeah. And we're kind of being kept warm with this with this Arcs of Omen boarding action style of play at, yep, you know, 500 points slash 25 power. But like, how is that going to transition into the new edition? So in the previous lead up to ninth, in the 8th edition, at the end of 8th edition, the lead up to 9th, we had Psychic Awakening, didn't we?
Yeah.
And a lot of those rules from Psychic Awakening, it was bringing life to sort of older factions. And then in the new codexes for those factions, a lot of those rules were just kind of incorporated wholesale into the codexes. And examples of that would be like the kind of build your own successor chapter, build your own craft world, that kind of stuff just became part and parcel of the edition for codexes. So we'll be really interested to see how this kind of streamlined version of 40K that's designed to be fought in kind of close confines with a reduced pool of units and with a reduced pool of stratagems and warlord traits, like how that transitions into larger scale games on like traditional battlefields. Because obviously we're not going to play with such a restricted format, but equally we've got like that new detachment, the Arcs of Omen detachment, which effectively has just like no restrictions whatsoever. You can just do whatever you want, and there's stratagems that allow you to, you know, normally it's like you can have one high fleet build attachment. There's a stratagem that says, ah, sod it, you can just have two, fine. So yeah, it'd be really interesting to see. Just a quick side note, although before we move on, is that 5 lictors and 1 death leaper is 25 power, which is, you know, circa 500 points. Steve, when we get an X game in, I'm going to bring that army. That's going to be my boarding patrol.
Right. Okay. My Black Templar might be in trouble.
Yeah. Yeah.
Out of the shadows.
Quick, paint some silver shoulder pads for them. Why do your Black Templar, why are they suddenly all joined a Death Watch? No reason.
That would be great fun to play. Absolutely. Absolutely. I love it. I love it. And I think we're going to break some guidelines there, but they are guidelines. I think it's a fun thing to be exploring in the game that has to happen. You know, this sort of fighting goes on all the time. And it just makes a change from seeing L-shaped bits of terrain on the table and, you know, objective markers floating in the middle of nowhere. So, yeah, I think a refreshing way to play the game.
And, of course, there are, towards the back end of the book, there are the boarding action missions, which allow you to replay the campaign, don't they, Steve?
Yes, yeah, yeah. So there's 8 of them, and they've broken it down to kind of 4 stages. So you've got Scour of the Darkness, War in the Warp, Fall of the Rock, and Reclamation. Apart from the first one, there's options you can play around that. So, yeah, you can relive the action if you've got the exact same forces. Or, you know, that would work for a little mini campaign with your mates, no matter what you've got. So, yeah, I think again, the missions themselves, you know, they're all using the GW recommended walls and hatchways. But the missions have plenty of variation with, you know, different objectives, underdog rules, all sorts of things. So even if you don't want to play them exactly as shown, then I think, you know, you can definitely cherry pick some interesting things out of it that you can pull together to make your own mission. So, yeah, I think they're always good to have.
Absolutely. And you can always just add them to your kind of your vault, your shadow vault of missions to play if you're not playing in the campaign, just to kind of do whatever you want.
Yeah, 100%.
You could equally change the drastic defense mission to any kind of defensive mission. Retake the elevator doesn't have to be on the rock. It could be retaking a specific objective within a city fight, and you're just playing within the close confines of a building, and they're therefore playing in a kind of boarding action type way. But yeah, I like the flexibility that these missions give you, because yes, they give you the kind of really like set out version of the map, but like we discussed previously, if you're playing with different terrain, maybe you're playing with your Zone Mortalis stuff that you've got from Necromunda, or maybe just kind of building a kind of a labyrinthine mess of, you know, Munitorum Imperialis containers or something.
Yeah,
you're playing at a shipyard or whatever. You could kind of take, like any Warhammer rule, you can take what they give you and use it to fit your own. So if you want to take an army of six lictors, then you do that. And you know, and that flexibility is something that I think the hobby is brilliant for. That's in fact that's something that I'd really like to hear from people. So if you're listening to this, if you're watching it on YouTube, stick it in the comments. If you are listening to it via any other thing, then head over to Instagram or Facebook or whatever, and stick us a comment on the tweet or post for this episode. If you're going to change one kind of thing for your boarding action, what would it be? You know, rather than if I'm going to take lictors as my little army, I think that's quite thematic. I think that, you know, if I come across, if you're having a casual game and you agree with your opponent, I think that's realistic, isn't it? It's not like I'm saying, oh, I'm going to take five versions of Abaddon the Despoiler. maybe I'm wrong. Maybe Steve, I'll absolutely, you know, wipe the floor with you with my five lictors or six lictors. But yeah, we'd love to hear like what cool versions of boarding patrols that you could build if you could be slightly freer with the restrictions. What would you do, Steve?
Yeah, so what would I break? I mean, I think at the moment, you know, we've got these restrictions on can't bring this type or that type or limited on those. I mean, I think, you know, what about humans, but bring a load of Ogryn with slab shields to just smash their way through, a whole load of those, you know, with the human commander to keep them in line. I think there's options there that would, you know, what would you take? You know, what would you build to retake this space? So, yeah, I'd love to just rock out a load of Ogryn. That would be very cool.
So we had Astra Militarum rules, didn't we, in the Angron book, didn't we?
Yes.
And what did they allow you to do? You could take some extra character models and some attaché units and... you can only have one servitor unit and don't split infantry squads. Yeah, so that doesn't even give you the potential to add Ogryns to it whatsoever.
No.
Yeah, so that would be cool. Like, what would you have? Like a kind of commissar leading some Ogryns?
Yeah, yeah.
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 Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah, and then you could, you know, then having mixed units of grenade launchers and the big sticks would be cool. And you know, you could play them for real fun. You know, they would just go... charging into places, smashing things up, and you know, and then modeling wise, you know, putting some big searchlights on top of shields, or you know, just giving some of them optics so they can fight in the dark corridors, even some helmets or something. I think, you know, there's some, or maybe you could slip in a tech marine, or, you know, somebody,
a tech marine,
but just somebody who's going to go in
for Ogryns.
No, but they're escorting him to the right place so that he can then the overrides.
Oh dear, Steve, this is a really cool narrative thing. I built you a list, got a Lord Commissar, two units of five Bulgrins, and two units of three Bulgrins and three units of three Ogryns. I'm like, yeah, that's £25 on the penny.
Oh, right. I don't need anything else.
Start talking about tech marines. They're not even in the same codex, mate.
Well,
I used to tweak the rules, not throw them on the floor and jump up and down on the shards, you maniac. At least go with an engine, sir, let alone a tech marine.
Okay, all right. I'll wind it back a bit.
Wind it back.
But yeah, that's interesting. That is 25 then, is it?
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah. Lord Commissar, six Bulgrins, nine Ogryns.
Nice. Yeah.
All right, I'll paint my lictors up. You paint your Ogryns up. That's our boarding. Okay. We'll do that.
Yeah, and we want to hear what everybody else's ideas are, what they want to do. Brilliant.
Awesome. Right, and you can get hold of us on at AOTI40K on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. We've recently started posting the audio of our podcast on YouTube as well. It'd be really cool if you could head over to YouTube/AOTI40K subscribe to our channel, just so we can you know, build up the listener base, and like, it'd be really cool if you could share it as well, stick it on your social medias, as we'd love to spread the word of Ashes of the Imperium. And we will hopefully at some point start putting some snippets of the podcast and some little lore snippets as well onto TikTok as well. So one of the things that we've been thinking of doing is, you know, things like White Dwarfs and the Flashpoints, Sometimes it's not like a whole episode in itself. So kind of using snippets of White Dwarfs and flashpoints and little things like the Strikeforce Agastus box, it obviously comes with its own little booklet with some lore snippets on the new Space Marines with the crazy rocket launchers and the new Dreadnought. You know, is that going to be a whole episode itself? Probably not, but it would be quite cool to do some little short form videos on TikTok and YouTube and for Instagram stories. So yeah, jump on our socials, smash that like, comment, and the subscribe button, as they say, and we shall see you next time. And until then, keep calm and crusade on.
Cheers, guys.